This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The FHA is changing the way it does business.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's The Morning Open. Good morning, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Financial reform is all about compromise and a mixed bag from bank earnings. First, let's ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are down right now. The S&P off about 1%. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow shedding about 126 points at 10,599. In Europe, well, markets offer about 1% right now. And major Asian shares closed down today as well. The Hang Seng off nearly 2%. The Shanghai Index lost almost 3% on word Chinese banks may be cutting lending. We're getting word today the Federal Housing Administration is making some big changes in the way it underwrites mortgages. It's raising the premiums on mortgage insurance and tightening lending standards for some borrowers. We're going to bring in Richard DeKayser. He's president of Woodley Park Research. He joins us live this morning from Washington with some analysis. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
So why is the FHA doing this?
Well, their capital, basically the cushion that protects them from loan losses, is getting thin. It still meets regulatory requirements, but it's getting thin. And the worry is that with unemployment high and home prices still languishing, that future foreclosures are going to threaten that capital base. And the way to protect from that is by raising premiums, that is to say protecting itself by charging more for insurance on home defaults.
And sort of increasing that foundation, right?
That's right. They'll be collecting more money. Now, the problem, of course, is that that is directly a burden on homeowners. And the FHA is basically the lender of last resort in the housing market now. We used to have subprime lending, which essentially does not exist today. So the FHA's share of mortgages has gone from about 2% a few years ago up to 20%. So it does present a problem in that this lender of last resort is itself tightening credit standards. And we've had a decent recovery in housing so far this year, but it is by no means out of the woods. And this does threaten that recovery.
We got news, Richard, that construction of new homes fell 4% in December. This has a lot to do with bad weather. So, all right, the headline sounds pretty gloomy. There aren't as many houses being built. But isn't there a bright side to this, that the real estate market doesn't have so many new homes to absorb?
Well, that's right. In fact, the inventory of new homes on the market for sale has been falling for several years now. And today, or at least as of November, the last numbers we've got, is at the lowest level since 1971. So it's a good news, bad news story. We're building less. That's bad for the economy, but we're working off that glut, or what was once a glut, and that's helping reduce downward pressure on prices.
All right, Richard DeKayser from Washington. Richard, thanks.
My pleasure.
Massachusetts has a senator-elect today. Republican Scott Brown won the seat held for decades by Ted Kennedy. Now it's up to Senate Democrats to find a way to proceed without its 60-vote filibuster-proof majority. Marketplace Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale is with us this morning, live from D.C., with the fallout and a look forward as well. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So with Senate negotiations over reforming financial regulations just getting underway, how's this Massachusetts upset going to change things?
Well, it does mean Democrats have to attract some Republican support, and there are two issues at play there. One is a proposal for an independent consumer financial protection agency, which is something that's strongly backed by consumer advocates as a necessary reform. But banks and businesses say that such an agency would be too much government intrusion into the financial system. Lenders will feel like the government's looking over their shoulder and will make loans more expensive. And Peter Morici at the University of Maryland's Business School agrees that there really is no such need for an agency.
We already have consumer protection agencies within the Federal Reserve and the Federal Trade Commission. The problem is to get those folks to do their jobs and do it properly, not to rearrange the boxes and create yet another grand bureaucracy.
All right, John. So what's the other area of possible compromise to get a regulatory reform bill through the Senate in this new atmosphere?
Well, there's this proposed tax on big banks the president has made to make sure that all the bailout money is returned over the next 10 years. The soon-to-be senator from Massachusetts campaigned against the new bank tax, but especially in the face of these billion-dollar bonuses for bank executives, the fee remains very popular, a good populist issue, and the Democrats are unlikely to compromise on that issue.
All right. Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. John, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Bank earnings today. Bank of America reporting a loss of about $5.2 billion. A lot of that charges on paying back government bailout money. Financials still taking some big hits from people not being able to pay back credit. And we did get word from Morgan Stanley and Wells Fargo this morning that they did make a little money. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, January 20th, 2010, at marketplace.org. We mentioned earlier about China telling banks to cool it on the lending so as to not overheat the Chinese economy, taking away the punch bowl China style. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong has more.
China's top bank regulator told the banks to get stingier with the credit this year. Last year, total loans in China rose 32%. That was the guts of the country's stimulus package. This year's increase may be half that. Also today, a major Chinese bank reportedly halted all loans for the rest of January. David Cohen is with Action Economics in Singapore.
They want to ease off of the accelerator a little bit after implementing a rather aggressive stimulus package over the past year or so.
The fear is feverish lending is creating asset bubbles and inflation, and a lot of loans that will never get paid back. Investors are still awaiting the big tapping of the brakes and appreciation of the Chinese currency. Beijing controls that, and Cohen says today's draining of money from the economy means a currency boost can't be far off.
News like this, tends to push forward the expected time of arrival.
Boosting the currency would slow Chinese exports, cooling the economy but hurting factories in the process. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Nearly a year and a half into the economic crisis, global trade imbalances between big consumer countries in Europe and the United States and big exporters such as China still remain a big concern for policymakers. Now, to fix the problem, the governor of the Bank of England is calling for big changes in the way the International Monetary Fund does business. Christopher Worth has more.
Mervyn King has called for effectively merging the IMF and the G20. This would create a governing council that could encourage countries with high savings rates, like China, to spend more at home and take pressure off the U.S. and Europe to do all the spending. The key issue is China's currency, which many think is undervalued, allowing it to become the exporter to the rest of the world. King says that if this problem isn't addressed, it will only be a few years before the world slips into another economic crisis. But Andrew Hilton of the CSFI think tank says these problems can't be addressed by simply creating bigger institutions.
And if you merge the G20 with the IMF, the institution which is already too big to be responsive becomes that much more unresponsive.
He says the only way to fix these problems is through more bilateral deals. The IMF will review the way power is allocated among donor countries next year. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
Well, tax revenues are down and demands on services up. States are running out of money to pay for things such as jobless benefits. Half of state unemployment systems are now deep in the red, including the states of California, New York, and Texas. And more are headed that way, according to a study today from investigative news organization ProPublica. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that.
First things first, laid-off workers still get their unemployment checks when state funds go bust. States simply borrow from the feds. They've borrowed $25 billion already. That'll go higher by mid-year, according to ProPublica, when another nine states run out of money. Ultimately, the states have to pay the feds back. Scott Pattison of the National Association of State Budget Officers says they've only got two choices.
Raising the taxes on businesses to pay for the unemployment benefits, or you decrease the available benefits.
It's a lousy choice in a recession since higher employer taxes can stunt job growth. Gary Burtless of the Brookings Institution says states are largely at fault here.
State legislatures should build up healthy reserves when times are good in order to cover benefit payments when times are bad.
In the past decade, though, businesses pushed for lower taxes. Now, he says, they're paying the price. 36 states have already had to increase the tax on employers to balance the books in their unemployment funds. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This morning, Congress is scheduled to look into ExxonMobil's planned purchase of natural gas giant XTO Energy. But the hearing may be less about the buyout than controversial drilling practices natural gas producers use. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
It's called hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. Energy companies inject water, sand, and chemicals into rock formations. That creates thousands of cracks in the rock, freeing up hard-to-reach oil and gas reserves. But a new study by the Environmental Working Group says the process can also contaminate groundwater with known carcinogens, like benzene. That's why the report's author, Dusty Horwitz, says Congress needs to regulate fracking under the Safe Drinking Water Act. Right now, oil and gas companies are exempt.
You know, the industry has talked about the cost that, you know, it will have to pay to comply with these laws that everyone else has to comply with. But they don't talk so much about the cost of cleaning up contaminated water, which can be astronomical.
Horwitz says water contamination in upstate New York, for example, would force New York City to spend billions of dollars building a new treatment plant. The oil industry says fracking is completely safe. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The White House has ordered by the end of the month some high-value government data be made available online at data.gov. It's part of President Obama's campaign promise touting government transparency. As Brett Neely reports, open government may also be good for business.
You may think the government just churns out paperwork. Michael DeConta sees all that as valuable information.
When you think about how much work actually goes on in the federal government, whether it's research or whether it's operational type work, there is just massive amounts of data.
DeConta is a computer expert who helped set up data.gov. He says the site is a potential goldmine for clever entrepreneurs.
To actually exploit that data takes other websites that would then turn around and use the data from data.gov.
Whole empires have already been built from government data made public, says Jake Brewer of the Sunlight Foundation Advocacy Group. He says, look at the Weather Channel that's now worth billions.
That is all taking live information, but that's government information that's been made free many years ago.
Brewer thinks if the government really follows through, entrepreneurs will create more jobs than the stimulus package has. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Finally, think of it as sort of a biting entitlement. David Freilich of Delaware County, Ohio, actually got $1,500 for being bitten by a rabid bat. County leaders were surprised about a little-known state law that provides anyone bitten by an animal with rabies can claim the money for medical reimbursement. The code stipulates the bitten person must ask for the money within 4 months. Commissioners voted to give the money to Freilich, even though he was 2 days late. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.